College English Test Band 6 Part 2 Listening Comprehension Section A Directions In this section, you'll hear two long conversations. At the end of each conversation, you'll hear four questions. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Conversation 1.
Good morning and welcome to People in the News. With me today is Megan Brown, an environmental activist whose controversial new book, Beyond Recycling, is making headlines.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to explain to the audience what my book is really about.
Critics of your book assert that you're trying to force radical changes on the entire country. Some claim that you want to force everyone to eat a vegetarian diet and make private transport illegal.
I'm aware of those claims, but they simply aren't true. People who haven't read the book are making assumptions about my arguments. They know I'm a vegetarian, that I don't wear leather or fur, and that I always use public transportation. So, they're depicting me as a radical animal rights activist and environmentalist, determined to force my beliefs on others.
But don't you want others to adopt your practices? You've campaigned for animal rights and the environment for decades.
I'd love it if people chose to live as I do, but my life choices are based on my personal convictions. They aren't my recommendations for others who don't share those convictions.
Well, in this excerpt from your book, you argue that meat consumption and private transport are devastating the environment and that the best choices for the planet are vegetarian diets and public transport.
I did write that, but those are examples of what I call best practices, not what I'm actually suggesting. In my guidelines for saving the environment, I suggest modest changes, like eating vegetarian meals 2 days a week.
You also endorse high taxes on meat and other animal products and increased taxes on gasoline. Those taxes could force poor people to adopt your life choices.
But the taxes I suggest aren't that high, less than 3% only. Plus, the money generated would be allocated to environmental protection, which benefits everyone.
Questions 1 to 4 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 1. What do we learn about the woman's new book? Question 2. What do some critics say about the author of the book? Question 3. What does the woman claim about the diet changes she suggested? Question 4. What does the woman say about her suggested tax increase?
Conversation 2.
With me in the studio today is Ms. Jane Logan, author of a new book, Secrets to Success. She claims to have uncovered how people achieve success. So, Ms. Logan, in your book, you claim that successful people have many things in common. For instance, they know their strengths when pursuing a goal.
That's right. They also tend to be motivated by a negative or positive life event. They credit their success to having someone in their life who believes in them.
You also write that there are a number of different factors related to success. And while successful people are driven to achieve their goals, the ultra-successful have even greater ambition.
Yes, greater ambition, as well as a burning desire to be the best of the best. is also a common characteristic.
Right. So those who are determined don't see obstacles as something that prevents success, but mere inconveniences that need to be overcome.
Absolutely. Successful people are also optimistic, as it is important to stay positive while being aware of obstacles that can deter us from achieving our goals.
That's a good point. All too often, people give up at the first hurdle. Would you say, then, that most successful people make it all by themselves?
Not exactly. They are usually good at cooperating with people and understanding the needs of others.
So people will be willing to help them, I guess.
That's correct. And this often leads to a great deal of mutual respect, whether it's with a colleague, an assistant, or even a receptionist.
Most successful people I know are very passionate about their work. Would you say that passion is the single biggest key to success?
Not entirely. There's a prerequisite. That is, you have to work in an environment that nurtures passion. If that exists, success will follow.
Questions 5 to 8 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 5. What has the woman revealed in her book? Question 6. What do successful people attribute their achievements to? Question 7. What do successful people do when faced with difficulties? Question 8. What is one prerequisite for passionate work, according to the woman? Section B. Directions. In this section, you'll hear two passages. At the end of each passage, you'll hear three or four questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. The saying, blind as a bat, simply isn't correct. The truth is that all 1,100 bat species can see. And often their vision is pretty good, although not as excellent as other night-hunting animals. There are two main groups of bats which are believed to have evolved independently of each other, but both from a common ancestor. The first group, known as megabats, are mostly medium-sized or large bats who eat fruits, flowers, and sometimes small animals or fish. These species have distinctive visual centers and big eyes. They use senses of vision and smell to capture their prey. For example, flying foxes not only see well during daylight, but can also distinguish colors. They actually rely on their daylight vision and cannot fly during the night with no moonlight. The second group, called microbats, are smaller in size and mostly eat insects. These species use echolocation to find their way and identify food. Scientists have proven that despite their poorly developed small eyes, these bats still can see during the day. When we consider the nightly lifestyle of these bats, we will see they have to be sensitive to the changing light levels because this is how they sense when to start hunting. Moreover, vision is used by microbats to travel over long distances beyond the range of echolocation. So the truth is, there are no bats which are naturally blind. Some species use their sense of hearing more than their eyes as a matter of adaptation to a particular lifestyle, but their eyes are still functional.
Questions 9 to 11 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 9. What do we learn about mega bats? Question 10. How do microbats find their way and identify food? Question 11. Why do some species of bats use their sense of hearing more than their eyes? Passage 2. A study has found that educational TV shows come with an added lesson that influences a child's behavior. Children spending more time watching educational programs increase their emotional aggression toward other children. This shows that children can learn the educational lesson that was intended. However, they're also learning other things along the way. This unintended impact has to do with the portrayal of conflict in media and how preschool-age children comprehend that conflict. TV and movie producers often incorporate an element of bad behavior. This is to teach children a lesson at the end of the program. Educational shows have pro-education and pro-social goals. However, conflict between characters is often depicted with characters being unkind to each other, or they may use emotionally aggressive tactics with each other. Preschool children really don't get the moral of the story. That's because it requires that they understand how all the parts of the show fit together. You need pretty complicated cognitive skills and memory skills to be able to do that. These are still developing in young children. However, parents shouldn't completely constrain children's viewing. Parents should instead watch with their kids and help them to understand the plot. Parents can comment along the way and then explain the message at the end. They should explain how certain types of behavior were not appropriate. This will help children interpret and get the message and help them learn to watch the show for those messages.
Questions 12 to 15 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 12. What does the passage say about children watching educational programs? Question 13. Why can't preschool children get the moral conveyed in the TV programs? Question 14. What does the passage suggest parents do? Question 15. What should parents do right after watching the TV program?
Section C, Directions. In this section, you'll hear three recordings of lectures or talks followed by three or four questions. The recordings will be played only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Recording 1. While it has long been a practice in Asian countries, many people in Western countries have yet to embrace the no-shoes-in-house rule. For many in those countries, wiping their shoes before going inside is regarded as sufficient. After all, they may think, a little dirt doesn't hurt anyone. But I can give you several good reasons why people should remove their shoes before going inside their homes. Bacteria are everywhere. They collect on your shoes when you walk along sidewalks, public toilet floors, and even office carpets. In one study conducted at an American university, researchers collected microscopic germs from footwear. They found that up to 421,000 units of bacteria can collect on the outside of a single shoe. And it only takes a little bit of dirt to damage your timber floors. The more dirt you track in, the more it scratches and the more often you have to clean. The extra scrubbing will harm your floors over time. Shoes can also leave marks and scratches on floors, especially high heels or shoes with pointy or hard parts. These can dent and scratch your floor. And if you live in an apartment building, removing your noisy shoes is the polite thing to do out of consideration for your downstairs neighbors. Walking around with bare feet is actually better for your feet. It strengthens the muscles in your feet. Though many people are accustomed to wearing shoes during all their waking hours, the more time you spend wearing shoes, the more likely you are to incur foot injuries as a result. And if people aren't yet convinced by my arguments, I can give one final reason. The dust and toxic chemicals you bring into your house via your shoes can deteriorate the air quality in your home. Toxic chemicals are everywhere in our lives. Insect-killing chemicals used on public grass areas, cleaning chemicals on the floors of public areas. By kicking off your shoes before you enter the home, you are denying entry to these harmful chemicals. Given the amount of time we spend in classrooms and the number of shoes that pass through them every day, you may well understand me if I were to propose a no shoes in the classroom rule.
Questions 16 to 18 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 16. Why don't many Westerners take off shoes before entering a house? Question 17. What is the finding of one study by researchers at an American university? Question 18. What is the final reason the speaker gives for removing shoes before entering a house? Recording 2. Emotions are an essential and inseparable part of our consciousness. They are part of a built-in mechanism which allows us to cope with the ups and downs of our lives both physically and mentally. When we hide our emotions and our true feelings, we stop being genuine, spontaneous, and authentic in our relationships. When we put on cultivated and polished faces in the company of others, we stop being true to ourselves. Socially, it may be a good tactic to hide our true emotions, but morally, it is also a breach of faith and trust. Although humans are more advanced and intelligent, animals are more genuine and authentic in their behavior and responses than human beings. The more educated we are, the less transparent and reliable we become. We are drawn to our pets because pets do not lie. One of the first steps in dealing with emotions such as anger or fear is to acknowledge them as normal and human. There is nothing sinful or immoral about being emotional unless your emotions make you inhuman, insensitive, and cruel to others. Feelings of guilt associated with emotions are more devastating and damaging than the experience of emotion itself. So when you deal with the problem of emotions, you should learn not only how to control them, but also how to accept them and manage the guilt and anguish arising from them. Our brains are made up of a primitive inner core and a more evolved and rational outer core. Most of the time, the rational part of the mind controls the information coming from the primitive core and makes its own decisions as to what to do and how to respond. However, during critical situations, especially when a threat is perceived, the outer core loses control and fails to regulate the impulses and instinctive responses coming from the primitive brain. As a result, we let disturbing thoughts and emotions arise in our consciousness and surrender to our primitive behavior. In times of emotional turmoil, remember that emotions arise because your senses are wired to the primitive part of your mind, which is self-regulated, autonomous, and spontaneous. Your rational mind does not always deal with the messages coming from it effectively. These messages are part of your survival mechanism and should not be stifled simply because emotions are unhealthy and betray your weaknesses. When emotions arise, instead of stifling them, pay attention to them and try to understand the messages they are trying to deliver. This way, you make use of your emotions without losing your balance and inner stability.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 19. What does the speaker say about hiding one's emotions? Question 20. What should we do first in dealing with emotions? Question 21. What are we advised to do when emotions arise? Recording 3. Good morning, class. My topic today is how to feed a hungry world. The world's population is expected to grow from 6.8 billion today to 9.1 billion by 2050. Meanwhile, the world's population more than doubled from 3 billion between 1961 and 2007. Simultaneously, food production has been constrained by a lack of scientific research. Still, the task of feeding the world's population in 2050 seems easily possible. What is needed is a second green revolution. This is an approach that is described as the sustainable growth of global agriculture. Such a revolution will require a wholesale shift of priorities in agricultural research. There is an urgent need for new crop varieties. They must offer higher yields but use less water, nitrogen-rich fertilizers, or other inputs. These new crops must also be more resistant to drought, heat, and pests. Equally crucial is lower-tech research into basics such as crop rotation and mixed farming of animals and plants on small farms. Developing nations could score substantial gains in productivity by making better use of modern technologies and practices. But that requires money. It is estimated that to meet the 2050 challenge, investment must double to $83 billion a year. Most of that money needs to go towards improving agricultural infrastructure. Everything from production to storage and processing must improve. However, research agendas need to be focused on the needs of the poorest and most resource-limited countries. It is there that most of the world's population lives, and it is there that population growth over the next decades will be the greatest. To their credit, the world's agricultural scientists are embracing such a broad view. In March, for example, they came together at the first global conference on agricultural research to begin working out how to change research agendas to help meet the needs of farmers in poorer nations. But these plans will not bear fruit unless they get considerably more support from policymakers. The growth in public agricultural research spending peaked in the 1970s and has been shrinking ever since. The big exception is China, where spending has far surpassed other countries over the past decade. China seems set to transition to become the key supplier of relevant science and technology to poorer countries. But developed countries have a humanitarian responsibility, too. Calls by scientists for large increases in the appropriation of funds for public spending on agricultural research are more than justified.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 22. What is an urgent need for feeding the world's population in 2050, according to the speaker? Question 23. Where should most of the money be invested to feed the ever-growing population? Question 24. Why does the speaker give credit to the world's agricultural scientists? Question 25. What makes China exceptional in comparison with the rest of the world?
That's the end of listening comprehension.